NYC, and joining us now is Gretchen Reynolds, phys ed columnist for the New York Times. And she thinks that the longer you exercise doesn't necessarily mean the more successful your workout is. That's just one of the thoughts in her new book, The First 20 Minutes, Surprising Science Reveals How We Can Exercise Better, Train Smarter, and Live Longer. Gretchen, welcome back to WNYC.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I guess almost all of the mortality reductions attributed in the scientific literature to exercise are due to the first 20 minutes of a workout. Is that your conclusion?
Yeah, pretty much, yes. There's actually a very steep curve in terms of the benefits that you get from exercise. If you've been just sitting on the couch, if you really truly are sedentary, then you will get so many benefits in the first 20, maybe 30 minutes of moving around. You will almost certainly wind up prolonging your life, reducing your risk for heart disease, reducing your risk for diabetes, reducing your risk for osteoarthritis, all sorts of benefits. You will continue to get benefits if you work out more, but you will get them at a slower rate. So if you are sedentary, get up and move, and the benefits are enormous.
But the idea is also that fewer minutes of exercise a week or per session, but at a higher intensity than most people do, right?
Well, if you want to really get the most health benefits, then yes. There's some really wonderful research showing that you can get virtually all the health and fitness benefits that you need from, oh, maybe 10 minutes of working out if you do it hard. But you do have to do it pretty hard. If you're not willing to do that, you can still get benefits by going for a walk, but you'll need to do it for at least 20 to 30 minutes.
So, listeners, our phones are open. Do you read Gretchen Reynolds in her New York Times health blog? This is your chance to call with your questions about your exercise or training regimen. Are you curious about whether you should stretch before or after a workout or both? How much you should drink during an exercise session? Whatever. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. It seems like every week a new study debunks another that we had just gotten used to. The body is so fascinating, so perplexing, because what we know about it is always in flux. Is it a challenge for you as somebody who tries to write about these things?
Well, it keeps me employed. That's good. And what I find interesting in my beat is that there are so many really deeply entrenched myths about how we should exercise or when we should exercise and what we should eat. And when they actually put them to the test in a lab, many of them turn out to not be true. And certainly one of them is stretching, which is quite possibly the most controversial thing I've ever written about.
I mean, and people who don't know that this came from, got into the general culture from one of Gretchen's articles. It was a 2008 piece about stretching, and it was the most emailed article on the New York Times website, I guess, that year, and that was an election year. And not only that, but the article came out just before the Obama-McCain election, just in the week before Election Day, and yet this was the most emailed article at that time. And the disconnect is what? We all think that it's better to stretch longer but stay still?
Well, yes. Most people think that they learned in grade school, as did I, that you are supposed to stretch before you work out, and you're supposed to stretch by leaning over or otherwise picking some sort of pose, touching your toes, leaning against a wall and pushing your hamstrings, and you hold that pose, which is called static stretching. And if you go to any soccer field in America, I can almost guarantee you'll still see the coaches telling all the kids to get down on the ground and stretch their toes. And the science is really persuasive that that's not going to provide any benefits, and it may actually be counterproductive.
So what should you do?
Well, generally, the science is pretty good that you should warm up a little bit, meaning you actually do want to warm up the tissues, the muscles, the tendons, and so on, so that they actually are heated a little bit. And you can do that by just doing an easy version of whatever you're about to do. If you're going to run, then start out with 5 minutes of jogging. Start out by doing something that is actually active. That's called a dynamic warm-up. And that does seem to both improve performance and slightly lessen the risk that you'll get injured. You don't necessarily have to, though. There are plenty of people who just go right out and start running, and they never get hurt. Science can't tell us why. But if you're doing something and it's working, don't change it. If you've been getting injured, you might think about a good, well-constructed, and fairly brief warm-up.
And I think strengthening is very good for avoiding injury. Like if you have a tendency toward tendonitis in your knee, let's say, exercises that strengthen the muscles around the knee before you run rather than necessarily focusing so much on stretching. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes. And in fact, there's some really interesting science that shows that as you get older, which I'm no longer in my 30s, that the best way to maintain flexibility in your joints is probably not stretching. It's actually weight training, which does strengthen all of the tendons, ligaments, everything around the joint, and so you have better range of motion. So, yes, weight training is really important and probably far more important than stretching.
That makes a lot of sense.
If you want to avoid injury.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Tom in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I've been exercising for years, and I find that I've gotten injured more when I do intense exercise immediately for a short period, like if I lift heavy weights right away or I run really fast right away. So, I mean, it seems like dangerous advice to give people to say, you know, very intense exercise for 10 minutes, that's impossible. I mean, it's a recipe for injury. I mean, you're going to need a 10-minute warm-up and a 10-minute cool-down. So there you go, you got 30 minutes right there.
Why not, Gretchen?
Well, and I should clarify, when I say intense exercise, actually the very best thing to do is what are called, or at least potentially one of the good things to do, is what are called high-intensity intervals, meaning you go hard for a minute, you go easy for a minute, you go hard for a minute, you go easy for a minute. And that seems to allow you to get the benefits of the intense exercise without necessarily hurting yourself. And there's some pretty good, in fact, very good science showing that you can get a lot of the health and fitness benefits of a much longer workout if you do at least part of your workout intensively. But he's right. Going for 10 minutes really hard is quite difficult and probably will increase your injury risk.
Gretchen Reynolds, author of The First 20 Minutes, Surprising Science Reveals How We Can Exercise Better, Train Smarter, and Live Longer. And Jean in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Brian. My question is, if stretching is inconsequential, what does that say about regimens of yoga and Pilates?
Great question.
Yeah, well, it depends on what you're hoping to achieve from them. And one thing that the science is showing pretty persuasively is that most of a person's flexibility does appear to be innate. We really are born with a genetic predisposition to be either quite flexible or quite inflexible. And there's only a very little amount of wiggle room that within that we can change. You can stretch for 5-10 minutes a day and have very little difference in your actual flexibility. Mm-hmm. But you can actually make your muscles, your joints, everything feel better by moving them, by stretching. And certainly yoga does do that, and it makes a lot of people feel much better. It can improve strength. It almost certainly will not improve aerobic fitness. But anyone who likes yoga, I think it's wonderful. Just make sure that your yoga instructor knows what he or she is doing.
Bob in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say I love your show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, your guest, I believe Gretchen, mentioned doing an intense workout for 10 or 20 minutes. I like to jog, and I'm wondering if jogging fits into that kind of description, and if so, does one have to jog, like run fast, to be considered intense? And I'm 48 years old. just so you know.
And again, the intensity of your workout is really, it depends on what you want to get from your exercise. If you really want just health, if you just want to be in better fundamental shape, if you want to improve your lifespan, if you want to decrease your disease risk, just go for a jog, go for a walk, that you will get so many benefits. If you want to either get your workout over with quickly or get greater fitness benefits, then you do need some intensity. And jogging, depending on how hard and fast you do it, may not be enough. But what you can do is what I do, and it's a workout called fartlek, which I guess I can say on the air. And
just
it basically just means pick a tree, 100 yards away from you. Go harder till you get to that tree. Go slower for the next minute and a half. See another tree? Go hard. Just have some fun with it. And a little bit of intensity can make a big difference in both your health and in your running, actually.
You write about active couch potatoes in your book. Can someone actually be an active couch potato?
I worry that I am. Many, many of us are active couch potatoes. What we do is we exercise maybe for an hour a day. We go at lunch and very dutifully work out. Then we spend the entire rest of the day sitting. We sit at our desk. We sit in front of the TV. And that amount of sedentary time is really unhealthy. It actually has consequences that our exercise does not necessarily get rid of.
Stephen in Greenpoint, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. A friend of mine suffered a back injury some years ago, and he's in his 70s, and the anxiety that he faces of triggering any further injuries, but he's become sedentary because of this injury. And I'm wondering where I can find a plan for this person. Do they have to see a psychiatrist about overcoming the anxiety of causing further injury to diminish the sedentary behavior that he's suffering from now?
Yeah, well, the first thing, obviously, is to see a doctor and make sure that he doesn't have actual nerve damage, that there's not a true injury there. And then if there's not, I'm not a doctor, but there is very good evidence that for many types of lingering pain, that if you can just start moving, it does lessen the pain. That there's very good evidence in terms of knee pain that even for someone who has osteoarthritis in the knee, if they can move it, if they can start to move it, it tends to lessen the pain and feel better. But it is very difficult to overcome the first reluctance to do that. And it may well be that perhaps a psychiatrist would help, perhaps also just a very good physical therapist or a personal trainer who's very sympathetic.
Yeah, and you're talking about gradualness too, which could help the person just to start and take the first steps. And I guess the rules of effective exercising would be different for people at different ages. So, for example, the intensity that you recommend, people still have to be aware of what their maximum heart rate is and stuff like that.
And intensity becomes a very relative term. What's intense for one person is going to be very easy for another. And for someone who has been extremely sedentary, you can actually get pretty intense exercise by getting off the couch and walking. Someone else would need to run hard to get their heart rate up. And it is important to monitor how your body feels. Even the formulas that you see at gyms for maximum heart rate, that applies to the general population. It may not apply to you, and almost certainly does not apply, by the way, to women. The formulas are redone the formulas for women, and they tend to be lower. It changes with age. It changes with how fit you are. It changes with what kind of person you are. Everyone should listen to what their body tells them. But the main thing their body will tell them if they listen is move.
We have a minute and a half left. Let's do a couple of things real quick. One, thin people. They're thin even if they don't exercise, some folks. Does that mean they're not at the risk of heart disease that other sedentary people are who are more overweight?
Not necessarily at all. In fact, there's some very good evidence showing that you can be what is often called fit and fat, and that can usually be healthier than someone who is thin and completely sedentary. The most important part is the fitness. The body seems to need to move, and fitness is really important for cardiac disease risk.
And you tell us in the book the answer to the question, is Gatorade the best drink for recovery after a workout?
I'm a huge fan of chocolate milk, and the science supports that, which is
chocolate milk.
Chocolate milk contains both carbohydrates and protein, and both seem to be, and also fluids, and all three of those are very important for replenishing the things that you've lost after a workout, and also for giving your body the protein that is needed to rebuild muscle. And it also tastes very good, so I keep chocolate milk in the refrigerator now.
Well, that's a happy way to end this conversation. Exercise expert recommends chocolate milk. Gretchen Reynolds, her new book, The First 20 Minutes, Surprising Science Reveals How We Can Exercise Better, Train Smarter, and Live Longer. She also writes the Phys Ed exercise blog for the New York Times. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was a pleasure.